All right, let's go around the NFL here in loop on Sports Radio 610. And the question of the day was, like, how do you get your confidence back? I do wonder if just stealing off on somebody is one of those, because apparently we have our first fight of Texans training, like real fight.
Yeah. Real fight.
A Texas training camp. And go ahead and guess, 713-572-4610. Who do you think were the participants in the first real fight of training camp? I'll try and give people a good 45-second head start.
I would have gotten it? I would have gotten it.
You would have gotten one of the participants.
I would have gotten one of the
participants. And it's easy to get there, right? Yeah. Like, we've seen both of these gentlemen, in fact, in fights as Texans here at various points. But it ultimately comes together. We get a little bit of spiciness. And as I mentioned, one of the guys on offense is getting his groove back in a stellar way is number 86 of your program, Dalton Schultz, fighting on the other corner, in the blue corner. The safety, I believe he is number 45 this year, Russ Yeast. Mm-hmm. And this makes so much sense. Like, this makes all the sense in the world. 25. Why did I say 45? 45 is EJ Speed, but 25. Yeah. Somebody said Schultz and Sting. Somebody said CJ Gardner-Johnson. He actually
kind of.
He shows up a little bit. Because can you now give me the reporting that you've seen from the various feet on the ground, or boots on the ground, of what happened between Dalton Schultz and Russ Yeast?
It said first real fight, so they were mixing it up. It was Dalton Schultz and Russ Yeast. Apparently Yeast hit him pretty hard or took him to the ground, and they
gave him infection.
They mixed it. Remember, Dalton Schultz was the one last year. Was it Derek Stingley?
Yes. Correct.
And Stingley pushed the mess out of him, too.
Yeah, and apparently remember – Dalton Schultz kind of ran right at him. Well, apparently Dalton Schultz kind of ran right at Russ Yeast. And apparently there was some sort of, I guess, near whatever you want to call it, mix up, dust up, where Dalton Schultz put CJ Gardner in a headlock.
He said, I'm tired of this belt to ass stuff.
I think that's it. I think that's a factor.
Well, look, I think for one, Russ was the guy who was in that little dust-up that was not fully a fight, but looked like it almost became a fight at one point during practice here at Houston Medical Center training camp site or what have you. So I wonder if he might just be a little bit of a jerk. Like, you know what I mean? And, of course, I don't say that as a judgment, but he might be that guy that gets under people's skins, because it did feel like that was what was happening then, and I could easily imagine that's what's happening now. On top of that, you mentioned the belt to ass. These safeties have been talking a good amount to the tight ends. And I know Dalton Schultz is a talker himself. He might have just gotten to a point where he was just like, I am done abiding this.
And it's perfect timing in terms of what do you do to gain your confidence? You start throwing hands, man. You start throwing hands.
All right. But and look, I am very much always here for laughing about fisticuffs. It makes me laugh. And yes, shout out to the 713, CJ Gardner-Johnson and Schultz. You were very close. You had two.
Yeah.
You had like one and a half of the participants, because I don't know how far we can put CJ Gardner-Johnson within this. But for Dalton Schultz, like last year you had that. But then when you get to the season, you don't necessarily see that same passion, that same energy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have confidence that you see that kind of translate in a different way for him this year? Because, I mean, I gave him a lot of credit. I don't know if you heard his availability from Saturday.
Yeah.
Felt like he took a little bit more accountability for his season. And it seemed like he is in a better space headed into this year, especially with Kaylee and, you know, the tight end, background that he has and the ways in which he can kind of divulge tips and tricks for his tight ends. I'm hoping that this energy that you're seeing here is not just, you know, him being frustrated, but that it shows up in the way that he goes about things, especially when you talk about the energy and effort that he gives, let's say, blocking and those types of things on the field.
I think he definitely is more confident. Now, look, the offense, we know, has just been struggling mightily and mixed bag, it seems like, today. We'll get a report from Sean and others as we move along here today. But I think he definitely has more confidence in his blocking assignments, and I think that was the frustration last year. They put him on an island against some of the best defensive ends, every defensive end that he faced in the league. So I think he's more confident that way, but he's professional enough to take accountability. But I do think I do believe that this is, he's had enough, and he's a veteran. He's one of the more experienced guys on the offense, definitely one of the most experienced on this team now. So I think he's like, hey, we're not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, we're not going to take it. Yeah. Yeah, I need that fire and passion to show up for Dalton. And I think that would be good for the fan base, because people were getting after him last year because of a seeming lack of that fire and passion. Mm-hmm. Let's translate this to every week on the football field. And I think that people would be a lot happier with Dalton Schultz, just in a general sense. So, a little bit of a first actual factual fight out there at the Greenbrier. I imagine maybe it was just too hot down here to get in the fight. So they're like, hey, man, yeah,
I don't want
to
work that hard.
Come on. And then we might have to run afterwards. Especially, yeah. Did you see Brian Schottenheimer have his team run because they was fighting too much?
Yeah, that was a little silly, but I guess whatever works.
Some other things around the NFL. Let's actually kind of keep it around the AFC South. As we're getting depth charts, we talked about the Texans' depth chart. Mm-hmm. Some of the notable things, Damian Pierce slides in as the second running back behind Nick Chubb. Remember, Joe Mixon is on the non-football injury list, so he's not showing up on the depth chart right now. Christian Harris, who him and Damian Pierce did not seem like they got involved in practice, but they were off to the side. Both of them are active, though, when it comes to like a designation on you know, rosters or what have you. Mm-hmm. Christian Harris, still a backer for Henry Toutou. So he is ahead of EJ Speed on the depth chart, which I found to be interesting. Those were kind of some notable things. And Ariante Ursary listed as the starting right tackle on the depth chart right now. But if you slide over to Jacksonville, some interesting things happening when you have the two-way player du jour that they're trying to get out there in Travis Hunter, the rookie, who has been switching pads, you know, and everything during practice to obviously get the different jersey colors. As of right now, he is listed as a first-team wide receiver and a second-team cornerback. How'd you receive that? Because I was a little surprised to see that, to be completely honest.
Maybe a little, but as I thought about it, it made sense. I mean, it would be something to list him as the first-team cornerback and the first-team wide receiver right out of the chute. I do think he's getting, obviously, as we know, a lot of reps at cornerback. He's going to play a lot. It's going to happen. It is definitely happening. He's going to play. Clearly, he's a starter on the offense. I think he's going to get a lot of snaps on the defense. It just makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's funny because I think if you were to talk about his progress as a player, he is further along as a cornerback.
Probably.
And more polished in that way. Also, they have more of a need at cornerback. Mm-hmm. But he is such a talented, like, just raw wide receiver. However, you look at where the head coach is and where he's calling players, and that's Liam Coleman on the offense side.
Yeah.
And I think that they'll probably look at it as, but we would much rather have him affect the offense while also then maybe getting some burn in the defense. Of course, still early on, there's preseason to go through, and that might still work for him to actually be a starter on both sides. But very interesting to see just the early, you know, kind of designation of what he looks like.
I think it's going to be sort of the reverse Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders took every snap on defense and a lot of snaps on offense. I think it's going to be the reverse of that. Like, when we need you, you know, with the third down conversions, I mean, third down and distance and all that, passing downs, he'll be out there.
Yeah. So, regardless of where he plays, he's going to get worked out when he plays the Texans. I'll tell you that for damn sure.
Yeah.
How about this? Other things that are happening in when it comes to depth charts. The Indianapolis Colts, who I believe they're playing on Thursday. So, that's more football to look forward to. But who's going to start at quarterback? The depth chart won't tell because both Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson are listed as starters. It is Anthony Richardson or Daniel Jones on that first line for quarterbacks, which that can't bode well for Anthony Richardson, can it?
Well, my first thought on this is, what is this? North Texas State, North Texas University, or University of North Texas, Sam Houston State, whatever. This is a college thing, man. This is so college. So-and-so or so-and-so. Running back so-and-so or so-and-so.
We don't want to make that decision, and we want to tell y'all yet.
Just, it was doing that here at one point.
That is correct.
Yeah, who
that
was
is true.
Doing that? Tell me the name. Give me a name of who was doing that.
I won't say. I would not say.
That is so Bush. That is so Bush League, man. The NFL wants you to have a starting lineup for a number of reasons, and a starter. Do it. So that's the first thing that I thought of. Like, don't be so Bush League. Just name someone out there. Who's getting the most reps? Who's getting the start, you know, in your most significant preseason game and moving forward? That's the first thing I thought of. The second thing is, I'm so glad I'm out of that business, man.
So
I am so glad I'm out of that business.
So good to be out of that business, indeed. No, I do find it interesting. And maybe, look, it's worth considering that Anthony Richardson was dealing with that shoulder injury as well. Mm-hmm. But it is such nasty business that he is actually in a real life competition with Daniel Jones, a dude who we know what that is.
Yeah.
We know who he is and what he is. Mm-hmm. And you're in a real life, there is no sliver of light between us battle with him. Yikes.
Yeah.
Is what I have for them.
Yeah.
Yikes. Some other things that are happening around the NFL. This was interesting to make note of. Actually, I shouldn't mention this first because, of course, the Texans will be playing the Minnesota Vikings in their very first preseason game. It does look like J.J. McCarthy Per Kevin O'Connell, the head coach of the Vikings, will indeed be playing on Saturday. And I imagine he's also the starter in that space. Yeah. But yeah, excited to see what that young rookie will bring in this, because look, we haven't seen what he is. We've seen Justin Jefferson basically, without saying it, say, hey man, he's rookie and he's got ways to go. So they're going to get him out there. They're going to give him opportunities to play.
I think they like him, and they're not playing games over there in Minnesota. They're going to give him a shot. I do think the Texans, especially offensively, are going to play a lot of this so-called starting offense, and they should. So it should be pretty fun. This is going to be a pretty significant preseason game as they go.
Yeah, and of course, just – I think the big thing for me is, and look, it's not going to be the full iteration of the Brian Flores defense. Nobody brings out all the bells and whistles. Just seeing this offense for the first time against somebody who is not the Texans defense will be insightful, even if for a few drives when it comes to the first team. Some other things. I saw this and I was just like, again, I think we're just looking at the down bad Olympics in this around the NFL, because the Cleveland Browns, come on down. They have added quarterback Tyler Snoop Huntley to their roster of, what was it, five quarterbacks to begin with?
Yeah, five, including Deshaun Watson.
How's he doing in camp?
Who, Deshaun?
Yeah.
Is he hell if I know.
Is he in camp?
They don't even want to show the man.
Yeah,
Deshaun got to be the one to post his own damn pictures.
Yeah, the sick behavior that way I saw. And by the way, I have good company in this take, and J.J. Watt also believes that this is nonsense, but the Browns got a QB stat tracker going where they actually have completion percentages during training camp for Flacco and Pickett and Dylan Gabriel and Sanders. And I'm like, do you have no shame?
Let me say it again. I am so glad to be out of that business right now.
And J.J. Watt, and he made a great point, obviously pointed to something that we talked about with Matt Burke. Mm-hmm. You have no idea what they're working on in individual drills and what their individual periods, what they're attempting to do. So the idea and the incompletion is not the same as watching in a game where we know the intention is to complete the pass in a very particular way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's insane. But they add Tyler Huntley to this. And it's not just because they don't believe that these guys are doing well. Apparently, they're dealing with injuries. I know that Dylan Gabriel was dealing with an injury. Shedeur Sanders himself also dealing with injuries.
Kenny Pickett,
that's right. Hamstring. That is just, oof. Yeah. Like, you already have a whole bunch of mid and all of the mid is hurt?
Yeah.
Yikes.
So how many do they have, like, legit? Six?
Six.
They have six. So they, obviously, we mentioned Deshaun Watson, but he's not going to be given a real shot to do anything.
He ain't clearly playing.
No. Joe Flacco. And then you have Kenny Pickett.
Who's hurt.
That's three. Who is hurt. Dylan Gabriel, who was a third-round pick for them. And then Shedeur Sanders, who was a fifth-round pick for them. And now, welcome to the largest quarterback room in all of the National Football League, Tyler Huntley.
Good gracious. Wow. Who you pulling for, Cleveland? Who you pulling for? Who is this? Flacco?
No, I think everybody pulling for Shedeur, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at their depth chart, it does line up like the way that we talked about it. It was Flacco at the very top, Kenny Pickett second, Dylan Gabriel third, and Shedeur Sanders still showing up.
A lot of people I kind of keep up with. A lot of people are complaining a little bit about Shedeur not running with the first team at all.
He hadn't thrown a lot of interceptions and everybody
else because I think Dylan Gabriel been throwing – more with the first team than Shedeur.
Yeah.
So it's that whole, oh, you're not giving them a chance and all that stuff.
Yeah. But he is getting reps. It does. I was looking at a rep count. I can't remember who.
I saw the same thing. Yeah.
It might have been Zach Jackson of the Athletic out there. And he was getting a decent amount of snaps, including like additional reps. But of course, who you're getting snaps with always matters as well.
Salute to that stat tracker.
Are they even going to have an opportunity for the cream to rise to the crop? Because it doesn't feel to the top. It doesn't feel like they have enough to go around for all these guys.
They almost have to make a call here in the next week, right?
It has to. Like, you have to start trimming this down.
Three guys. You know, have three guys, let them battle it out.
All right, a couple more things I wanted to mention. This was a small player-for-player deal, but it's weird to see those at this point of the season. The Eagles acquired cornerback Jacorian Bennett, who has not been a bad second-year player, from the Raiders exchange for a name that you might be familiar with, defensive tackle Thomas Booker. So he will go to the Raiders. But the Eagles doing another one of these things where they have, a excess of players. They have a surplus in one place, and they get a pretty damn good player on the other side. Jacorian Bennett, as I mentioned, has been pretty good. I was looking at his passer rating against last year, and I believe that he was in a situation where, like, over the season, it was like an 86.7 passer rating against, which is not substantial. Now, if you actually broke down the games that he played in versus the Bengals and the Chiefs, tore him up. against the Rams and the Steelers, did a fantastic job. So, you know, like, again, it's different variations, but at this point, to add a player that seems like has an opportunity to really contribute, this is why Howie Roseman is very good at his job. However, to localize it, it did make me think, is there a surplus that you have, like, or a surplus for deficiency, and maybe not the deficiency in knowing who the player would be coming back, but like a position? Is there that for the Texans right now, or how good do you feel about –
There is.
What is it for you?
Safety.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've got a pretty deep safety. Obviously, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, Kalen Bullock. You got Jalen Reed.
And he's been pretty good, but he hasn't been J-Rock in his, like, demonstration.
MJ Stewart, early. Russ Yeast, and Jimmy Ward.
Okay.
You know, maybe someone would want to take on someone, one of those guys. Maybe.
Oh, so that's the – I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about that as deficiency.
No, you're talking about
the depth
that
there.
They could be the Eagles in this case.
That's interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And get something back.
Okay.
You got six safeties that all of them have experience – well, except for Jalen Reed – have experience and can play.
That's a fair point. Yeah, no, that could be. Now, of course, I don't know if Nick Caserio would do it that way. And honestly, the most likely circumstance at this time of year in general is always trading for like a pick as opposed to trading player for player. But again, I think it was just an interesting way to look at the idea that they've done a good job of stacking this team with some depth, especially with the rookies. I think a number of the rookies showing up. I can't think of a rookie that hasn't had some level of good performance thus far in training camp, which, of course, salute to Nick Caserio. That makes it even more so. Gives you a little bit more of an opportunity to possibly utilize that to make your team better in the now or maybe even in the future by adding future draft picks. And finally, you know where we're going to end this, where we always end this, by giving you an update on...
I missed
on,
this.
You, do you?
I missed... No, I didn't.
I was like, come on. I know damn well you weren't on a day off out here. Like, I wonder the top 100
is or whatever.
We're getting even further, right? We are actually getting into the 40s of it all. So I did mention yesterday Baker Mayfield was 50 and I think somebody tagged us. The NFL Network put up a graphic that seemed to indicate that there might be 8 more quarterbacks coming on the top 100. It makes me feel even more confident CJ is up here.
Oh, it make you feel more confident?
Yes. If there's eight, or they might have just put a graphic up.
They might have.
But if there's 8 spaces left, then I would agree with you that CJ is definitely up there.
So I mentioned yesterday Baker Mayfield was 50th. Quinyon Mitchell, the cornerback for the Eagles, 49th. We now get your top 100s of the day. Of course, these are voted by players. Number 48, linebacker for the Vikings, Jonathan Greenard.
How about that?
And then number 47... a man who might not be on his team for too long, wide receiver for the Miami Dolphins, Tyreek Hill.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's another hot and heavy rumor out there. We'll see.
It should be. Like, they've done the thing to rebuild that team where they've taken the O-line and tried to make it more substantial. And they've changed some of the other things to make it so that they have a little bit more or a little bit less finesse, a little bit more strength, because what's the problem with them?
Yeah.
They get to when it's cold, they're going up to Buffalo, they're going out to St. Louis, or it's not St. Louis, to Kansas City, and they're having, you know, real issues at that time of year. Beef it up. Except what's not beefing it up? Tyreek Hill.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Right. And especially with the ways that they're going back and forth with him and the head coach, it might be time to just be like, hey, buddy, moving this thing along.
Yeah.
Moving this thing along. All right. That's around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get to this, because there was a profile on Laramie Tunsil done in the Washington Post, and Chris Strasser, former offensive line coach for the Texans, gave a lot of quotes that seemingly lead to the idea that Laramie Tunsil was not the problem. But what if he wasn't the problem? 713-572-4610. Let's examine that next. Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. That's John Lopez. I'm Reginald Atatula. Figgy Fig hanging out with you. even the question itself has gotten people going on the text line. 713-572-4610. What if Laramie Tunsil was not the problem last year? And everybody's like, but he was, though. He was definitely part of the problem. What you mean? Yeah. Chris Strasser, formerly the offensive line coach here for the Texans the last couple of years, he seems to indicate that he wasn't. He seems to indicate that he does not believe Laramie Tunsil was the issue. And
if OJ didn't do it?
Come on now.
I mean,
what if?
Hey, it's I guess in theory, technically, there is a possibility that that is the case. Mm-hmm. He was giving a lot of quotes to the Washington Post, who had a profile of Laramie Tunsil. Clearly, obviously, Laramie now in Washington with the Commanders. So there's some of this looking and examining of, you know, what it was like. Because I imagine if you're a Commanders fan, and you bring in this Laremy Tunsil, high priced guy who has obviously been an all pro at points, but yeah. You look at last year and you go, well, how could you be that good and be on an offensive line that bad? They have questions, which is just like we had questions. But some of the quotes included like this one, quote, and this again, Chris Strasser, offensive line coach last year. I don't think our room was good last year. It was a combination of a lot of things. By no means Laremy being the issue or the main issue. It was a combination of so many things. Our chemistry was just not right, but it was not all at all Laremy's fault that our chemistry was not right. It really wasn't. There was a lot of things going on, and it just wasn't good enough. My fault. I would point the finger to myself, number one, close quote.
All right, let's just talk about that one right there. And, again, this was the Washington Post profile. And Laremy Tunsil, let's talk about what we know, all right? This is just things that we know. Chris Strasser has been an offensive line coach for a long, long time. Not only an offensive line coach, a very good offensive line coach. The Washington football team, back then anyway, the Broncos, the Colts, and then the Texans. So it's not as if this guy was, and this is no shade at Cole Popovich, you know, but just as an example, a first-year offensive line coach who really was trying to just figure things out, maybe lost control of the room with a veteran who kind of beats, you know, goes by the beat of his own drum, et cetera. Chris Strasser has pelts on the wall. We know that, right?
You just mentioned the NFL. Like, he's obviously done offensive line
college for years.
For a long space. I understand what you're saying.
So no one can argue that, right?
I just want you to know there is a but coming with all of this, but keep going.
Yeah, but I'm going to start with what we know. Very well-respected, longtime offensive line coach. All of a sudden, it didn't work last year. We also know this. Laremy Tunsil, top three, top five pass blockers in the entire NFL. Would anybody argue that?
I mean, there are statistics that would very much point you to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
We also know that Bobby Slowick was, well, we say no. Maybe this is more of an opinion, but it seems to be a very popular opinion. Very much a very rigid offensive line coach, offensive coach in terms of his system.
It does feel like we can triangulate that.
Right?
Yeah.
So Slowick was a big part of the problem. I think most of us would agree. Tunsil, awesome as a pass blocker. And Strasser had a lot of pelts on the wall. I put a little credence into what he said here. I really do.
Really?
A little bit. I think Tunsil could be something of a problem.
The ever skeptical John Lopez is like, I think I see
it. No. That doesn't take away my criticism of Tunsil for not adapting. Because the other thing he said, and let me read this one, was talking about the false starts and stuff. He said, we definitely did have a different cadence than what he was used to. I think he would say it was not that offensive tackle friendly. It took him a while, both years, to get used to it. Well, that's on Tunsil.
It was like two years, huh?
Yeah, that's on Tunsil. And that was my frustration. Figgy, your frustration. Yeah. Reggie, your frustration.
Wait, why are you talking about us when it was clearly Andre Ware's frustration? Yeah, it was. Like that, he was the most frustrated of all of us.
What did Andre say? I don't remember. So all I'm saying is if these things are true and we believe them, and certainly some of it on, you know, especially the false starts and such on Laremy Tunsil, I kind of believe he wasn't the only issue. He wasn't the problem in the room.
Oh, no, you don't get that bad
right?
As an offensive line if he's the only issue.
Mm-hmm.
I just am not really here for this kind of soft-pedaling of Laremy Tunsil's role last year. Yes, he was a good pass blocker, but there was a lot of instances of run blocking where he was not solid. You talk about the snap count and the false starts being like, yo, it was a complicated system.
Mm-hmm.
Buddy,
yeah.
Like, well, we latch on at some point. Like, ultimately, you need to figure out a way for this to be workable.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of your job. Yes, the coaches need to put you in a better position. I fully and completely agree with that. But also, the thing that was really off-putting that I think has consistently been off-putting, and I know for Laremy, he kind of pushes back at like the Albert Breer report that it was a toxic room. And we kind of pushed back at it because that felt like a harsh word to use. Even if it felt like they were not kind of all in, at least in lockstep, in the direction that you're going. There's a C on your chest, big dog. Like, you are a captain, right? The idea that, I think Strasser got to the idea that, yeah, man, Laremy didn't want to necessarily be like kind of a leader in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
That is what you get when you are the captain. Like, that is part of being in that space. That's the hierarchical nature of football, is that you end up in places where even just by nature, you making it a little while. Mm-hmm. You the OG, now you have to be a little bit of a leader. And that is a failing to some degree of sure. a player. Like, as much as I understand that not everybody is built to be a leader, hell, I think we all have worked in a place where there's been a manager or whatever that we're like, yo, probably shouldn't be a manager, do yeah. not have the skills for it. However, football is that place where you kind of have to figure out a way to add that to your bag as well. And that was very much a failing of Laremy Tunsil in being that type of guy. As we're seeing, we can even go off of what we're seeing right now. Mm-hmm. The Titus Howard that we're seeing right now has done more to embrace that role yeah. in the short period of time where he has kind of become that, had that space in this offensive line than Laremy Tunsil ever
mm-hmm.
did.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't disagree. And I'm not saying Laremy Tunsil is off the hook. What I am saying is, I don't think it was just him, and I don't think Chris Strasser forgot how to coach. And so
I kind of agree with that.
You know,
I think if it was
not just him.
I think if it was that mm-hmm. simple, they could have just got rid of him and ball yeah. would have been rolling right now.
Right.
And
oh, by the way, one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to implement a new system, this power running system, I mean, would you still want Laremy Tunsil pass blocking? Let's look at yesterday.
Well,
how'd they do?
No, I don't think you could. And this is where I come from. Like, what is the foundational piece that new offensive line coach, Cole Popovich, who, again, you say first-time coach, first-time here. Like, he's done this before.
Never as the guy.
Was he?
Never as the offensive line coach.
Okay. But Cole Popovich has gotten out here, and he's stressed, like, nasty. He's stressed mm-hmm. all those things. He's stressed, you know, making sure that your fundamentals and your technique has been there. Those are things that Laremy Tunsil has not always been the best about, even as he's found a way to be a very, very good pass blocker. And I'll never begrudge him that. This is all like things that you would need to fall in even to get the baseline of being satisfactory.
But his technique, pass blocking, next level.
The technique all the way around, like this can't be piecemeal.
Yeah, yeah.
And it feels like Laremy Tunsil with the vet and all those things has not been committed to those. Mm-hmm. Now, we're talking a lot about Laremy Tunsil. I do want to turn around and go, I know you ain't talking Chris Strasser, because I know you're talking about his history. He did feel a level of checked out, because you talk about this is my responsibility. So what did you do to get this on track, dog?
Yeah, no, I get it. And I think that speaks to my other sort of thought, opinion, whatever you want to call it, is – you know, the dysfunction was not just in the offensive line room, as in offensive line men. It was Slowick, Strasser, Popovich. I think there was some dysfunction there. I think there was some disagreement there, and I think this speaks to it.
And what also speaks to it is that when you look at this team, what they did in you know, trying to remedy this is they cut out those three, that triumvirate.
Yeah.
Offense coordinator, offensive line coach,
yeah.
Laremy Tunsil. Those three are no longer here,
yeah.
which to some degree for me speaks to the idea that they did some level of diagnosing, and more so I think with the coaching, they looked at and they're like, if we want to be a better version of ourselves, this can't be how we continue moving forward. And again, the words that they've said on Laremy is more about the money of this, and I do think you can see the ways mm-hmm. in which the money factor in, especially as you continue to pay more and more guys
yeah.
and get prepared to pay more guys. But you also can't look at this and say, and ignore rather, big issue was offensive line play, false starts, and the three guys that get rid of all factored it in that
yeah.
in a big way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying it's interesting to me, and I think there are so many things that factors that were at play that it wasn't just, oh, Laremy Tunsil, he's a cancer. It wasn't just that. That's what I'm saying. It wasn't just that.
Will we have a different feeling if we see Laremy Tunsil be the one we thought we was going to get with less false starts
yeah.
and just the offensive line just gelling and vibing and all
yeah.
that stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that will give us a good credence. Like, I think that will give mm-hmm. us a good baseline on this, but we won't be happy about it. I also don't know that just because you find a better place for it to work, I don't know if that inherently means that it would have worked here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that that's also something that can be true in this case. But yeah, look, I understand what Chris Strasser was talking about. I do think that he has some validity, and I understand what you're trying to talk about. You can't put it all on Laremy Tunsil. Laremy Tunsil as a dude was not like, he was not bringing the entirety of the room down.
Correct.
But I also don't think that he was the solution of what you were doing here.
Yeah.
And especially when you talk about the money and the position of captain that he had, that's problematic. And especially also, I don't really take kindly to like Chris Strasser saying all this now. How about you help fix that? Like, when it's your responsibility.
But again,
to
I
do
think that maybe that was
2 years.
That was the dysfunction at the coaching level. You know,
yeah,
Slowick, Strasser, Popovich.
I will say it didn't help that he was a captain, highest paid
Correct.
Guy, and all that stuff. And the way he kind of went about it,
absolutely,
that didn't help either.
Yeah. So one thing I will say is I've been pretty negative about this offensive line. I'll admit that. But mm-hmm. if you compare what you had last year, spin that forward to this offensive line. if we're talking about guys at the top being, all right, Laramie wasn't negative and he's being portrayed as a second semi-negative guy, how positive was he? Compare that to what like Tytus Howard has demonstrated thus mm-hmm. far as seemingly stepping into that role. It's night and day, I think. So I think that that's a positive when you go into this offensive line. Offensive line, the actual coaching-wise, Chris Strasser, where he's talking about, you know, hey, there was a lot of things that were my mm-hmm. fault. Compared to the ways that, I mean, the videos that we've gotten, the opportunities that we've had to be a little bit closer to Cole Popovich,
yeah.
there's a standard very clearly.
Very.
Whether or not this offensive line has the talent to meet that standard, we will see. Mm-hmm. But a standard is very clearly set, and they will not dip below that.
Yeah.
Like, I think that that is also a difference from Chris Strasser as well. And I think also if you talk about making sure that the system and the scheme at a larger stance is capable of fitting to what you guys are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, Bobby Sloak was not doing that. Nick Caley has professed that that is his whole goal. And if he does deliver on that, that is three different areas where I look at it where this offensive line should be better suited to go out and execute this year. Still, is the talent there to be able to do it?
Mm-hmm.
We will see. But I do feel a lot better about this offensive line, at least in those places. Somebody said Laramie is gone. Who cares? Move on. It's, I mean, a big story that came out, and I think also it allows us to get, as I mentioned,
who cares, guy.
Let's see about this. Let's see how this offensive line develops.
Yeah, we are definitely looking at that. A better day for the offense. It seems like they fought both on the field metaphorically and on the field literally. Mm-hmm. It seems like we'll talk to Sean Pendergast and I believe Seth Payne as well at 12:40 to get their eyes from West Virginia. But coming up next, let's get into what's popping, including we finally reached it. The Summer of George. Shout out to Jason Alexander. We'll talk about that more next. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into what's popping here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Hope your Tuesday is going well. Quickly, a quick update. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans a little bit in just a moment after another day of practice. Practice two out there at the Greenbrier in West Virginia. And it seems like the offense battled back. Sounded like a good day of practice. So we'll hear from him. We did get our first fight.
Fight and a half.
I don't know if you can call it a fight and a half. The fight just becomes bigger.
Yeah.
Like, unless y'all break up and then something else pops off, which it doesn't seem like that was what happened. We'll get some updates on what the fight looked like and obviously the more important details of practice from Sean Pendergast at 12:40. But, yeah, Dalton Schultz, Rush Yee seemed to be involved at some point. C.J. Gardner-Johnson ended up in a headlock, which I imagine he did not take too kindly to. Like, if there's a player on this team that I imagine ends up in a headlock and then feels the very worst about it and might do something, I feel like he's high
Gave
on
him a nookie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like he's high on the I will retaliate.
I got your list. Belt the ass. Like, oh, okay. I got your belt the ass right here.
That's what we doing? All right. Don't worry about it. I got some for that. I got better not run Dalton Schultz on those seam routes. I don't know that'll go very well. But yeah, that's some of the stuff that happened at camp. We saw Damian Pierce and Christian Harris both working off to the side is what we've heard. Now, Damian Pierce had to be, he had to be returned from the physically unable to perform list, which is good. So both him and Christian Harris are now active.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see them be hopefully integrated into actual practice in the coming days. That is a big hope. But enough talking about the Texans there. Let's talk a little bit about the Astros, who have gotten a victory. Thank you, Astros, for giving me an opportunity to talk about winning baseball because it had been a little bit of a rough weekend.
It was.
For the Astros, but they got back to winning ways after getting a very big victory yesterday. At, is it still Lone Depot? Is that still what we're calling it?
Sure.
I mean, you would know.
Yeah.
You would know.
Yeah, let's roll with that.
Yeah, that's funny. 8-2, rather, victory. And, I mean, shout out to first and foremost, before I even start talking about the bats, shout out to Jason Alexander he gives you six innings.
That was huge, wasn't it?
Six innings of zero run baseball,
mm-hmm.
Only three hits. And honestly, early on, it was looking a little dicey, but just before you even got your offense going with an explosive fourth inning, top mm-hmm. of the fourth, he was doing work on making sure to get through those innings. And salute to him. Especially because the previous two times that he'd been out, we were like, oh, all right, what's Jason Alexander have? And it hadn't looked right?
He battled a little bit in his previous one. He kept them close. I can't remember the details, but I think they were losing by one run or whatever. But yes, the Summer of George, as you put it. I'm here for that, as they say.
I'm a Seinfeld dork, I'll admit it.
Yeah, exactly. But also, boy, did they need it in terms of the next two starts. You have an opener now, and who knows what you can count on. With a reliever starting a game, and then Spencer Arrighetti right off of the IL and his rehab starts starting tomorrow.
Well, before we move forward, because you mentioned him needing that also, but you still used Brian Abreu because the Miami Marlins started looking a little dangerous under Brian King, who came in for the seventh inning, and he gave up a couple of runs, three hits. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like Brian King has been – they've been getting to him a little bit. Like, I don't think he's been giving up a ton of runs. His ERA is still pretty solid at 3.11. But it feels like teams have been getting after him just a little bit. They trust him, the Astros do, Brian King. But that one was like – I tried to look at his game log, and I didn't see him giving up a ton of runs over his last outings. But, like, spiritually watching it, I was like, damn, it feels like of late people have been hitting Brian King more than I typically like.
I totally agree, and I have not looked at the advanced numbers or whatever, but, not just, you needed to use Abreu. You obviously needed to get the win, and now you're set up. But Brian King, I'm with you. I think he's been a little bit erratic.
Yeah. Thankfully, though, you didn't have to go to Hader because you had locked it up with some additional insurance runs later in the game, and then Hector Neris could close it out. But you mentioned you're going to need some real depth in the bullpen, because today's a bullpen day. Mm-hmm. Looking for an opener. I don't know if I've seen anything at least when it comes to information as to who is the opener. Someone did remind me, though, on the text line. I apologize for forgetting the area code from whence it came. But Dana Brown, who was on the broadcast yesterday, at one point did mention about John Rooney, the relief pitcher that they brought in from Miami, that, he did talk to him and said that, hey, we're going to get you into the action here pretty quickly thereabouts. I don't remember those are the exact words. This would be a way to, if they were thinking about it, because I imagine that he wasn't thinking about, hey, how is a spotter going to use his pen? But maybe he's thinking about how we're going to use our starters, and knowing that you might have used the opener. Maybe we see John Rooney get out here early on in his tenure as an Astro and open this thing up on a bullpen day, where you're going to need to be very efficient, because then you're coming back around to a Spencer Arrighetti return from IL start on Wednesday.
Yeah, you're just kind of piecing it together with string and tape right now. You're just trying to hold on as best you can to maybe get to production out of Arrighetti. We'll see. And then, down the road, Luis Garcia, JP France, any combination of those guys. Keep in mind, the Mariners are only three games back right now. They're just three games back. It's going to get real interesting real fast.
Somebody said broadcast was talking about AJ Blueball as well. Mm-hmm. That's not what they referred to him on the text, but I know who you're talking about. Yeah, he is with the taxi squad, so he is also an option should they need to go to him. So we'll see who ultimately is the opener. But all those guys are going to need to be on their P's and Q's, because they're going to be the guys that you need to use to get through. And hopefully the offense shows up like they did yesterday, because then you give your bullpen a little bit more leeway as well. They're not in as high of a leverage situation, because that fourth inning was gorgeous.
And you waited a while for that one. You've been needing that.
Yes. Yeah. I just loved how they just passed the baton. Yeah, as you called it, passed the condo line, just keep going. Pena double. Sanchez, Jesus Sanchez, who was very good in this game, RBI double. Then you end up with Altuve reaching on a bunt right down the line, very well laid down. Then you get a steal, a second. Then you get a single to left for an RBI. Then you get Christian Walker with a RBI fielder's choice. It just consistently, and a number of doubles in that, down both lines and into the outfield. That is the Astros baseball that I'm hoping to see. And I got a little confidence, and this is why you added the bats that you did. Not necessarily so individually each one could be like incredible, but so now you have a better opportunity of turning a single or a double into scoring, because the next guy will pick up and the next guy will pick up, where it felt like your lineup had gotten so thin that you weren't going to be able to pass the baton, so to say.
Well, and we talked about this before and after the trade deadline. I like that they're doing this, not just because they're scoring runs. They scored runs yesterday, but I think the makeup of the team, Reggie, is one of those. It's changed over the course of this season. We still don't know, obviously, Yordan, Myers, etc. But in lieu of that, you brought in guys that can maybe keep the conga line going, and you have pitching, have a back end of a bullpen that can maybe shut those things down. You're playing a little more small ball. We've seen that in recent weeks. You're not scoring runs, so manufacture them. I like what they're doing.
Yeah, I agree. And especially when you mentioned that small ball, like small ball gets better when you have the opportunity to also take effect and swing the bat and hurt them a little bit. So yeah, man, a good outing for the offense. Now you need to string them together, because very easily, I mean, with the 162 games, we've seen bad teams put up an inning like that every once in a while. The better teams are able to continue doing that, and so hopefully they have an opportunity to do that today. And again, it becomes important because and we've said this again, I might be harping too much on it. I don't know that you can guarantee that on Wednesday when Spencer Arrighetti gets his return,
exactly,
that he's going to give you six. Mm-hmm. I don't know that you can guarantee that. I'd be very happy to see it. It'd mean a lot of things in the short term, but also in the long term. But I think it'd be more fair to say that's a possibility he gives you four, and you need your bullpen to carry out the rest of that. So a bullpen day and then another day where you might have to support your mm-hmm. starter. Yeah, man, offense is going to need to help pick up some of the slack over the next couple of days.
You got to do that. You need it now more than ever. Maybe it'll get better and you'll be able to hit, you know, you'll be able to be the old Astros of, you know, big crooked numbers multiple times in a game, but you're just not there right now.
We said this, we talked about this earlier, and it was kind of a perplexing kind of circumstance that we got later in the day yesterday. Isak Paredes, third baseman for your Astros. Obviously, he has been out with dealing with, you know, the hamstring injury that had been looked as significant. It's a significant strain. Well, he had gotten a second. He got an original opinion and a second opinion, and it seems like yesterday we learned that he will opt to try and rehab that injury rather than having surgery. And you don't seem to like that at all.
I don't like it at all. I really don't. I admire, you know, his grit. Respect him, you know, immensely for wanting to gut it out and rehab and try to play this year. But the, you know, the you're weighing positives and negatives. I think there's a big line of potential negatives out there. And as much as I admire him and all that stuff and get it because he's a competitor, I would have hoped to have tried to take the decision away from him if I'm the Astros and say, no, have the surgery. Get the surgery. Maybe they tried.
It seems like it. Yeah. I mean, listening to Dana Brown, and Dana Brown talked about it before the game on Monday as well. He said, quote, in his whole opinion on this, he wants to work hard to try and get back this season. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's going to dedicate himself to getting back. Like, again, it could just be a very simple choice of words. This happens at times. Sometimes we can blow things out of proportion. I recognize that. All of that sounded like, yeah, he made that decision and we just kind of rocking with it, as opposed to a we kind of have a conversation. We have a consensus and this is how we are operating. He's like, nah, he want to do this. He going to work hard. We going to see what it looks like. And I do wonder if that some of that potential for a gap between the ways of handling this might be part of why you bring in Correa, not just for this year, but also with an understanding that we know this could go badly and we might need a third baseman next year as well. Hey, Carlos Correa, we still have you under control.
Well, let's talk about next year, because, you know, I really can't get myself to a place where, and I hope I'm wrong, where Isak Paredes is going to rehab enough, because it'll be what, at least another month, 2 months of rehab, maybe.
I can't put it. I'm nobody's doctor.
But you know, if it's torn, which again nobody has told us that, but it seems all the indicators are that, you know, he went to the first opinion, they recommended surgery. Second opinion, he didn't like it, so maybe they recommended surgery as well, which means it's torn. That is a long rehab. And let's say he aggravates that at the end of this year. Well, then he's still going to have surgery. And what is it? When's he going to have surgery? October? November? Then you're digging into, you know, potential of spring training next year. I get it. I admire it, as I mentioned. But I don't like this. I don't like this. You should have had the surgery. Get it done. You got Carlos Correa already, able to play third base. I think this is a big risk.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, or maybe the bigger part of it is, it doesn't matter if we like it or not. This is the plan of attack that they're taking. Yeah. So we ultimately just have to hope that it does work out the best and he's able to rehab this and show up again for the Astros, because without question, he's been one of your two best hitters on the entirety of this 2025 season. So best of luck to Isak Paredes as he works his way or attempts to work his way back from that injury. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, we return to West Virginia and training camp for the Texans. Let's hear from D'Amico Ryans after a pretty bombastic day of practice out there in West Virginia, and we'll hear that next.